This is the show on KJZZ, along with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein.
The engraving machine is working hard at Keepsake Trophy and Engraving in Avondale. The shop is on Western Avenue in an area now known as Historic Avondale. Colleen Shore owns it.
It's just a quaint, pretty little street, and I loved it when I first saw it. I didn't want to have my business in a strip mall. I wanted something that made it look different. Plus, I wanted to own it and be responsible for it.
Shore's been in the space since 2006. The street is mostly made up of older, smaller buildings that house small independent businesses. Among them, a laundromat, bridal store, a few restaurants, and a gun store. Historic Avondale basically runs between Van Buren and Lower Buckeye and Dysart and Central. Shore says you won't see a lot of chains in the area.
They'd prefer to have a lot of foot traffic, but the positive things are the rents are cheaper. We are a nice, tight-knit neighborhood. We all know what's going on. We know when somebody's on vacation. We know if somebody in the family died.
Shore is also the director of the Historic Avondale Merchants Association, which has been up and running for a couple of years. The name of the area itself isn't that old either. Consultant Ernesto Fonseca worked on a vision plan for the neighborhood and then went to work for the city for a few years.
Historic Avondale was formerly known as Old Town Avondale. And that was one of the first things that I proposed to change, primarily because I think it was important to start rebranding and giving a different perspective to what old meant instead of historic.
Fonseca says historic more accurately represents the area than Old Town. His former boss, Avondale Assistant City Manager Gina Ramos Montes, agrees. She used to be the city's Neighborhood and Family Services Director and says the rebranding is a piece of the overall revitalization plan. But she says the city also improved streetscapes, added a police substation and library, and helped renovate the facades on some businesses, among other projects. The city has also been recruiting small businesses to Historic Avondale, but Ramos Montes says officials are looking for a specific kind of business.
You're not going to find your typical vanilla shell type of office or commercial space. There are a lot of unique buildings. Almost all of them are much older, and so it takes someone that can see the potential.
Ramos Montes says the tax revenue businesses in Historic Avondale generate is important to the city, but more than that is the idea that Avondale's original town site is thriving. Ernesto Fonseca says it wasn't always that way.
One of the things that I told City Council when I presented to them as an employee back then was that, you know, one of our biggest problem is that nobody knows us. I mean, we have a little jewel right here that we have no way to showcase it. So we need to develop the tools to bring people here. And it's going to be painful. It's going to be a long stretch road, but we're going to make it happen.
Fonseca says part of that is emphasizing the area's art walk on the second Saturday of each month. He and others say it's a way to bring people to Historic Avondale and show them the area exists. And that's a key point. Colleen Shore says the goal has to be to make the area a destination.
Unfortunately, with our neighborhood the way it is at the moment, we can't count on our neighborhood to really support our businesses. So we really need people to come in from outside and come here.
Just down the street from Shore's shop is Creative Cupcakes. More than one person pointed to it as an example of trying to make Historic Avondale a destination. Owner Leah Cartwright says she's been there for 4 years and that business is really good. She says she liked the old feel of the space with the exposed beams. She also liked the rent.
I know it seems like a small street and it's out of the way or whatever, but there are things to get down here that maybe, you know, you can't get somewhere else with small-owned businesses.
Cartwright says her customers come from all over the valley. Avondale's Gina Ramos Montes says that's the point, to create buzz. And she's not concerned about other cities' historic downtowns.
I don't think we necessarily have to compete because we're a pretty big metropolitan area and there are a lot of people looking for interesting and unique places to go.
Back at Keepsake Trophy and Engraving, Colleen Shore says business has been pretty good. She estimates about a quarter of the street is vacant, but she's optimistic things will get better.
There will undoubtedly be toy dolls on many holiday wish lists this year. While Barbie may be the standard, new Disney princess dolls are becoming more popular, and there's even a new doll that purports to have more normal proportions and comes complete with acne and stretch marks. But what about paper dolls? Polly Law is currently a Grand Canyon artist in residence that celebrates the forgotten toy as the subject of her art. She brings the simple, two-dimensional figures to life with a detailed and intricate process. Polly, would you describe the dolls for us?
Well, I call them paper dolls with deep personal issues. And the form is what I call bricolage, which you could also call mixed media. I use materials. Bricolage is the artful use of what's at hand. They're flat, somewhat, but they're made out of each body part is articulated separately and cut out and painted and stenciled and whatever I want to do to it. And then I reassemble them using buttons and wire. And then I mount them in a shadow box so that they stand proud of the background by about a quarter inch. So it gives it a slightly three-dimensional quality.
I wonder first how long it takes and how planned out are these? Have you decided this is what you want this one to look like? Do you get creative inspiration in the midst?
Well, it takes me about 8 hours to do a single figure. Typically, the figures are about 12 to 14 inches tall. And I tend very often to work from a set of templates that I've worked out for the different body parts. But then once I have the pieces cut out, I have a vague notion of the gesture. I have a notion of the mood I want to capture, the emotion I want to capture. But while I'm working, things change. And I alter the gesture a little. I find maybe a new center of gravity for the figure, a subtler way to express the emotion. And so I tend not to do sketches per se. I sketch a lot in my head, mm-hmm. but I seldom put pencil to paper to sketch out things completely.
People wonder about dolls and how they're depicted, and it's usually the Barbie is always used as an example. And I wonder, does your use of paper dolls in any way reflect a depiction of women or the broader culture?
It does definitely have to do with how women are depicted. I work almost exclusively with female figures. I deal a lot with women who are under constraint, either from the kind of clothes they wear. They tend to wear costumes from, say, the Victorian period back to the Elizabethan period. And women's bodies were very constrained in that time, as well as just their whole lives in general, but they were just held in with all kinds of corsets and hoops and padding and all kinds of things. So a lot of my characters actually, I wouldn't say they look uncomfortable, but their actions are constrained by their clothing and by conceptions of what's appropriate.
Polly Law is a Grand Canyon artist in residence. It's the show on KJZZ. Hope you're having a good Friday. Along with our partners at The World, I'm Steve Goldstein. You're listening to the show from KJZZ with help from our friends at The World. I'm Steve Goldstein. Ice hockey in the desert seems to be an acquired taste, at least when it comes to the NHL. The Hockey News recently ranked the Arizona Coyotes fan base as the worst in the league, but that isn't stopping ASU from moving its successful men's hockey club team up to Division I competition. Mike Snee, Executive Director of College Hockey Incorporated, says ASU's decision is a game changer.
As much as anything, certainly as much as anything in recent memory, Penn State started the process to have a school of that size and that high of a profile. Elevate its successful club team to Division I status was a big, big deal, and certainly they've had as much success as anybody could expect with their student section selling out so quickly and the facility they built and everything. But I don't think it surprised anybody that a school in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. would add Division I hockey. but Arizona State, which is similar to Penn State in many, many ways, only located in the desert, when they decided to add a hockey, that gets people talking.
What is Arizona State seeing to say, hey, you know, guys, we really think this is something we need to be leading in? Because a lot of places would think, okay, maybe we'll jump on the bandwagon along with this. But it sounds like ASU really wants to lead this charge that a lot of us who aren't insiders don't know that this charge is happening.
I think Penn State really made people take note that a school where you might think, oh, it's a football school, and what are they going to care about hockey and so on? And they had a very good club program, but they didn't have any Division I hockey history at all. And then they added, and all of a sudden, it's as hot a ticket as anything. I think it was a combination of seeing that happen. I think the donors recognizing how good hockey on the Arizona State campus is right now at the club level. So what can happen if we make it Division I? And then at the same time realize, and I think this will certainly be true, Arizona State can own the California market because it's so close. And since most players come from either the northern United States or Canada, it's not going to be hard to recruit players when you come down to Tempe and walking out of practice in January in flip-flops. That's not really happening at many other schools. So a combination of things, I think, led to this. There's a young man from Scottsdale who right now is targeted as the top pick in the 2016 NHL draft. To think that the 18-year-old that all of the hockey professionals in the world declare as the best 18-year-old in the world in 2016 is a player who grew up in Scottsdale, that's exciting. And there are articles out there on this player where he says he was attracted to hockey because his uncle took him to Coyote games. Well, I'd like to think that there will be another player like that in 15 years. And when they ask him, you know, why did you play hockey? And he says, well, I went to a lot of Sun Devils games and I wanted to give it a shot.
Mike Snee is the director of College Hockey Incorporated. The upward move of ASU's men's hockey team will also necessitate other steps related to Title IX, the federal law banning discrimination on the basis of sex in any federally funded education program or activity. Amy Moritz is a sports writer for the Buffalo News.
One of the things about Title IX and one of the things that is actually unique about the law is that it's so fluid and flexible. It's really meant to meet the needs of individual schools and individual regions. So Arizona State, in order to stay in compliance with Title IX, and there's different ways in which they can go about complying with Title IX, but what they need to do is look at another women's program that they would add or elevate in order to offset the amount of student-athletes that they have on the men's side, and also to help compensate some of the spending and scholarship dollars that would go on the men's and women's side.
I don't know exactly what Arizona State would do, could do, will do. At some schools, though, would it make sense to elevate the women's equivalent sport as well, meaning if women's hockey were extremely popular in this area, would that make it any easier as it comes to Title IX, or should you just sort of do whatever sport you think makes the most sense to advance?
You really need to look at what makes the most sense. From just a very simple across the board, obviously, if you look at men's hockey, women's hockey, that's very easy. When you look at Arizona State's situation, there are a lot of other things that come into play as far as facilities, as far as equipment, and as far as who you're going to play. So looking at other sports, during their press conference, they mentioned women's lacrosse and women's rowing. So when you look at what kind of money you can spend and where you might be able to be competitive in your region and your area, those are some of the things that a school will look at in elevating and trying to balance their gender equity.
Amy Moritz of the Buffalo News. Arizona is filled with images of the past, well, more like carvings of the past, and you probably have walked past them without recognizing them. KJZZ's Nadine Arroyo-Rodriguez tells us more.
Have you ever strolled through South Mountain, A Mountain, or through a national park in Arizona? These public lands are filled with petroglyphs, images carved on rock surfaces. Did you know Arizona is among one of the best places in the country to see Native American rock art? And the valley has many locations where you can easily run into them?
Yeah, you can see petroglyphs throughout the park on many of the trails.
Arlen Simon is with the ASU Deer Valley Petroglyph Preserve.
I think a lot of times people just go real fast and don't pause to look. You're so busy watching the next step you're taking. But yeah, here we go, right here.
Simon walks me to a cluster of rocks near the South Mountain Pima Canyon entrance parking lot. These were etched by the Hohokam people. Petroglyphs are images packed on flat rocks and boulders hundreds of years ago. Their meanings are unclear. Archaeologists say they may represent interactions with the spirit world or about religion. They may also be telling a story or marking trails and boundaries. Simon says what is clear, the locations of the images are intentional.
They could keep track of what the farthest north point and the farthest south point that the sun comes up throughout the year. And we have to just realize that they were very connected to the landscape as far as they could see.
Start off at any trail in the area, and you're likely to see petroglyph images of animals and humans, as well as geometric designs of circles, crosses, and spirals.
I think South Mountain is one of the best locations in the valley to enjoy the petroglyphs.
There are thousands more petroglyphs throughout Arizona, including at Canyon de Chelly and Navajo National Monuments, Petrified Forest National Park, and the Deer Valley Petroglyphs Preserve. The challenge sometimes, Simon says, is seeing them clearly.
They are a little tricky to see depending on the lighting. The early morning and the late afternoon, evening are probably the best lighting to see them.
So the next time you're out hiking, stop a moment and check out the scenery or the rocks. Simon says there have been times when she brings a group of students to an area to research petroglyphs and has discovered a marking never recorded before. It's the show. I'm Nadine Arroyo Rodriguez.
If you've got ideas or hear things that make Phoenix unique, send us a note, the show at kjzz.org. And if you're looking for things to do outside the house, haven't you had enough of football and turkey so far this long weekend? Why not watch the Suns play the Orlando Magic Sunday night at 6 at U.S. Airways Center? Also, Zoo Lights, the annual event, starts this weekend at the Phoenix Zoo. Also, A Christmas Carol starts this weekend at the Playhouse in the Park in Phoenix. And the Capitol Steps perform this weekend at the Scottsdale Center for the Performing Arts. If the reality of D.C. isn't funny enough for you, enjoy the Capitol Steps coming up this weekend. The show is produced by our senior producers, Sarah Ventry and Jimmy Jenkins, with help from Bruce Drummond, Nadine Arroyo Rodriguez, Tiara Vian, Alexandra Olgan, and Kendra Sabo. Tracy Greer, Maria Springs, and Aubrey Abril are our digital team. Our managing editor is Al Macias, and our executive producer is John Hoban. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Let us know about good story ideas. The show at kjzz.org. For Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. This is listener-supported KJZZ-FM Phoenix and HD.